League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Live from Nick's Place for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Randy, just out of curiosity, have you ever heard of any other GM in NFL history doing something like this?
I have not. It's the first I've ever heard of it. I've been around a little while. Maybe it happens, but not to this extent. It's further down the road of being involved in coaching decisions from a GM chair than I've ever heard of.
Randy Mueller, longtime NFL executive, was the GM for the Saints from 2000 to 2001, GM for the Miami Dolphins 05 to 07, most recently the director of player of pro personnel for the Houston Roughnecks. Longtime NFL executive, and he's saying that he's never heard of anything like what the Houston Texans have done with Nick Caserio in the headset on game day with head coach David Culley. We have a couple final contestant here of the two beers, 1 foot. Intern Noah is the leader in the clubhouse. This is the final contestant here, Tyler? I think this is the final.
I think so.
Here we go. So everything riding on
this. And
he's
barefoot, too.
Is that cheating? Do you have to have shoes on?
I'm not sure. I think this is a pretty solid effort. Oh, 5 seconds.
Oh, he just burps in front of us.
No. 5 seconds. That's the rules.
I'm not sure I appreciated the burp in our direction. Why did he have to go our direction? Why not any other direction? I don't understand that.
There's a lot of movement there.
What time does he have there, PC? Oh, I think he got him.
He got him.
Oh,
wow.
Darren.
Okay.
27 seconds. That's a buzzer beater, too. Intern Noah just got beat at the buzzer. The final contestant, Darren, 27 seconds, gets the victory. Oh, he's feeling it a little bit, too. So giving away an Earl Campbell jersey, giving away a warm – oh, he just went no-brainer Warren Moon Viking jersey.
Just
no-brainer Warren Moon Viking jersey over the Earl Campbell Columbia Blue Oiler jersey.
Give it to him.
They're going to give away the other one to intern Noah. That's the way it should have been done. That's the way it should have been done. Big C saying it's not about the team, it's about who it is. You go Warren Moon over Earl Campbell? Wow, I think
if it was a Warren Moon Oilers, yeah. I probably would.
PC, we just heard Randy Mueller, who is a longtime NFL executive, was the GM for the Saints in the early 2000s, was the Miami Dolphins general manager from 05 to 07. BK asked him yesterday when he joined the wheelhouse, hey, Randy, have you heard of anything in NFL history that you have a general manager on the headset of a head coach during game day? He said, nope, never heard anything like that. You hear from some more executives. You hear from some GMs, former GMs, that are saying that this is something they've never heard of being done in NFL history. Does it change your mindset, your viewpoint a little bit on what Caserio's doing with Culley?
No, because he's been doing it for 20 years in New England.
He was never the GM before.
No, but he was on the headset, and he was basically the de facto assistant GM.
And he was an assistant on the headset. He was saying, this is the down, this is the distance, this is the hash.
There you go, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. So we're talking about he came from a unique system in New England. This was his role. He is continuing that methodology and role here. Do we expect Nick Caserio to completely change his ways because he came to Houston? Okay, everything I've ever learned under Bill Belichick, I'm going to throw it out the window, and I'm going to start completely different. When we talk about like the Bill Belichick coaching tree and why do these guys fail, they don't fail because they don't know how to coach football. They fail because they don't know how to relate to players. They all think they can be Belichick and be grumpy and surly and cuss people out, and they haven't earned that right and privilege yet. You know, young players aren't looking at him and like nobody looked at Josh McDaniels or Matt Patricia and counted their rings because they didn't win them as a head coach. So when Bill Belichick walks in the room, and this is a guy who was the elite defensive coordinator in the NFL before he became a head coach, was the elite defensive coordinator going all the way back to the mid-'80s with the New York Giants under Bill Parcells. So Bill Belichick had a much greater track record, resume, and line of success. So when you go to the Patriots and Bill Belichick says, look, it's my way or the highway, but if you do what I say, we're going to win, and then you win, players will buy in. When Josh McDaniels says, look, it's my way or the highway, and we're going to win, and you win six games, why the hell do I care what Josh McDaniels said? These guys all wanted to take on the Belichick persona before they had the Belichick accomplishments. That's why they fail.
Can't you say that's what's going on with Caserio, though? Like, if he's coming in and saying, this is the way that things are going to be done, it's the highway, it's my way or the highway, you just basically described all of the other disciples under Belichick, the McDaniels, the Patricias, you can go on and on and on, where they go in with that mindset that Belichick had, which I think Caserio has here with the power, right, where like, this is the way the organization's going to run. Like, if you're not getting the production, you're kind of going to have the same results of the other, you know, people off the branch in the trees of Belichick.
Does he have that attitude? Absolutely, but he's not the head coach. He's not there beating down the players every day in the meeting room telling them, this is how it's going to be, this is how it's going to be, this is how it's going to be. So there is a buffer, or multiple buffers.
Which might be better, yeah.
Between Caserio and the players with whomever the coaching staff is. So if those coaches know how to relate to players, it doesn't filter down the same way as when your head coach is screaming at you every time you come on and off the field, hey, dummy. It is different. It is a different mindset. So while I don't think that his attitude is all that much different, being in a different place does make a difference to me.
Like, it doesn't really bother me in terms of, like, the short term that Casario's talking to Cully. And my biggest fear is, I'm sure you've heard throughout this week, is that it limits what you want to bring in as a head coach. I feel like you're eliminating a huge pool whenever you decide that, or whenever that you have this attitude from Caserio where you're going to be the one that has the power, you're going to be the face, you're going to have the control, you're the dude that's doing coach GM shows every Wednesday, like you're being interviewed all the time. Like, Caserio, I think, likes that power. He likes that attention. So if he likes that power and he likes that attention, and he's going to be basically the end-all, be-all with this organization, doesn't that limit who you can bring in as a coach going forward?
I don't know if it limits as much as it makes you target differently, right? What we just described about Nick Caserio is Jeff Luhnow, right? And once upon a time in baseball, the GM wanted to be able to tell the head coach, to tell the manager, listen, I want you to bring the infield in. I want you to go to this bullpen guy. I want you to go into the shift. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. We're going to rely on analytics. We're going to do all these different things. Once upon a time, well, how are you going to get somebody to manage for your team? Because no manager is going to let the GM tell them what to do. But now, as we've spent now 20 years in the analytics era of baseball, that is much more commonplace. Is it possible what Nick Caserio is doing is just where baseball was 20 years ago when it came to analytics and the partnership between the GM and the head coach, as opposed to, I am the GM, this is my box, you are the head coach, this is your box, we will run independent of each other. I think now it's just he's looking for more of a partnership, so he's going to look for a head coach that is willing to participate in that partnership.
The difference between the football and the baseball aspect of it, though, is that a GM isn't buzzing down to the manager during the game saying, okay, I want you to pinch into the spot. You might have the conversation beforehand that, you know, if this guy's facing a lefty in the seventh inning of a close game, we want you to pinch hit with this guy. Like, it's more the planning aspect. You never had Luhnow telling any of his managers during the game, this is something I want you to do. Now, you probably had scenarios beforehand, but not during the nine innings of the game.
I would tell you, do not be surprised if you were to hear that Luhnow would have some kind of communication with a manager during the game, through an intermediary, through a message or whatnot. We certainly know he did it to Bo Porter, and Bo bitched about it, and Bo was out of here.
There's a difference between doing it before games and, like, in the lead-up to a game than the nine innings. But, yeah, maybe that is the case. Here's one more with Randy Mueller, a longtime NFL GM, longtime NFL executive, on the idea of a coach Caserio.
I guess it's just Nick's, you know, prerogative. He can do as much of that as he wants. I find it a little easier to hire people and trust them to do their jobs, and I don't think they really can appreciate someone looking over their shoulder and another voice in the mix. I just think sometimes, and again, that's just my personal preference, I haven't been around a situation like that where the GM has say on game day, other than maybe some discussion pre-game about who you're going to activate and how you're going to play certain players. But once the game starts, I've always been a believer of let the coaches coach. That's what they get paid to do, and They've been there through every meeting during the week. They know the ups and downs and the plan and everything. I sure wouldn't, because I don't have time for that. I'm trying to manage my end. The GM job itself is a full-time gig, so I'm not sure how you can be part coach.
That's an interesting part of the conversation that we haven't really discussed. I haven't really thought of, too, is like, okay, if you're okay with Caserio being involved in decisions on game day, whatever, that's your prerogative. Caserio's also mentioned how he scouts the future opponents. Like, not the idea of he's scouting their players is looking ahead as, like, are these guys we want to eventually bring in? He's looking at opponents in order to game plan against whoever the team is. This week, that case would be the Chargers, who will be facing the Houston Texans. Like, can you do both? Can you wear both hats? Can you be a general manager, which Randy Mueller is saying it's a full-time job, you shouldn't have any time to do anything else, and then also basically be, you know, an offensive analyst, an assistant coach on the David Culley staff?
Well, and this is kind of like what we were just talking about, right? The idea of, you know, the old school GM who's, I'm going to do my thing, you're going to do your thing. But Nick Caserio comes from an environment where he was expected to do all of these things, right? Bill Belichick expected Nick Caserio to do all of these things. So to him, this isn't, wow, I've got to take on all this extra responsibility. This is normal life to him. So for him, maybe it works in a scenario where it doesn't work for someone else who doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the expertise, hasn't been doing it before. If he's been doing it for 20 years under Belichick, he's probably already got his own system down. He knows how he's already got a ton of players already marked out. So now you're just adding more guys in. You've already got a system, a grade, et cetera, how all that all works. He's organized. He knows exactly what he wants to do. So while an old head, and look, Randy Mueller obviously was a terrific executive, but he's an old head. He was executive of the year 21 years ago. So the game has changed three times since then. If this is what works for Caserio, then there's no point in asking. You can't ask him to be successful. Oh, by the way, everything you're good at, change.
And I'm okay with him coming in and be like, this is the way we're going to do things. I am in charge of this operation. I'm in charge of this franchise. And if I'm going to fail, I'm going to fail doing things the way that I'm going to do them. Lamont tweeting into us saying, so neither of you have heard of the Raiders Al Davis and Cowboys Jerry Jones calling in plays from the suite, who were both also the general managers of their team. I have heard of that. But both of those things also didn't really work a whole lot, right? Because everybody kind of mocks Jerry Jones for having too much control. Dave Campo, I've compared to Dave Culley. The same thing with the Raiders whenever Al Davis was saying, hey, throw the ball deep, things like that. Those situations didn't work, which if you're comparing that to the Caserio situation, I think it's a red flag.
Well, Jerry did win a few Super Bowls before it didn't work.
And he also had coaches who weren't putting up with it at that time.
Well, no, the coach who didn't want to put up with it ultimately left.
Right, because of it.
And then the guy he hated the most won a Super Bowl with his team. But, you know, yeah, for years. And the biggest issue with the Cowboys was they could never replace Troy Aikman. And that's usually the problem with every team, is if you never replace the quarterback, well, you don't win. You know, in Oakland, they won in the 70s. They won in the early 80s.
Yep.
Well, Al Davis didn't, you know, suddenly start, you know, being a nudge in, you know, 1993. He was always that way. It just, they didn't have the same players. They didn't have, you know, you didn't have Marcus Allen. You didn't have Bo Jackson. You didn't have Jim Plunkett. You didn't have Ken Stabler. You didn't have the guys on D. Like, you didn't have those players.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Broadcasting live from Nick's Place for our ESPN 97.5 listener Christmas party. We're here till 3. Brad Kellner, Cody Stutes coming up 3 until 7. We come back. Let's take a look at some of these playoff implication games this weekend in the NFL. We do it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's beginning to sound a lot like ESPN 97.5. You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Nick's Place. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Patrick Creighton organizing a wing-eating contest here at Nick's Place for our listener Christmas party. 2713 Rocky Ridge will be here until 7 o'clock. winner of these this wing contest, which they're loading them up to make them as spicy as they can make them,
yeah.
Which 12 is cruel, right? 12 is too many? Is 12
Nuclear.
Too many?
No, 10 is usually...
Like, 12 is pretty filling, like, right?
10 is probably okay. Like, at Pluckers, they make you do 25.
That's egregious.
An insane amount of wings.
Yeah, that's a lot. So we have... How many people did you have doing this?
We have seven contestants.
Seven?
Who are going to do the hot wing challenge. It's 12 hot wings.
Nuclear.
Two beers.
Nuclear. So the
first one done goes home with the Earl Campbell autographed helmet.
The beers are doing them a favor, let's be honest, because you're giving them 12 atomic.
You got 84 wings coming.
Why are you trying to show off your mask?
I don't know.
Because
I said it wrong earlier. I'm just trying to atone for the bad math earlier.
Tyler Scott hanging out our Christmas listeners or listener Christmas party at Nick's place. Everybody's lined up. Y'all got time.
Yeah, they got to make the wings. So y'all like hang out.
Everybody's lined up like they're taking their mug shots. Like you got time, man. They got to make the wings. We'll let you know.
Craig could like write down their names. You know, I don't know. Whatever.
They'll be competing for an Earl Campbell autographed helmet. I don't know why you're even doing this, Big C. You don't even like Earl Campbell. You go War Moon over Earl Campbell. All right. What do you think about Ian Book starting at quarterback for the Saints, Big C? 14-point. Let's go around the NFL. Some games this weekend with playoff implications. In fact, this one has first place on the line in the AFC East. The Pats beat the Bills in a weather game a couple of weeks ago. Not expecting the snow we saw in Buffalo a couple weeks ago, but the Pats 9-5, home for the Bills at 8-6. Pats are 2-point home favorites in this one. I like the Buffalo Bills. I didn't play it. I like the Buffalo Bills to atone for this one. I think they were a little bit embarrassed with how they played against New England the first time around. Weather should not be the factor that it was. Actually, I did play it. I took a unit on the Buffalo money line, and I also took a unit on Buffalo +2.
They have to have this game.
All right.
I mean, they absolutely... You lose all tiebreakers. They have to have this game. They should be the more desperate team. Mm-hmm. And look, the last game they played in frigid, at some points, blizzard conditions. I don't think you got a true indication of this team is better, this team is not. Those type of games are not usually indicative of, quote, better team. The Bills clearly more desperate here. Yeah, yeah. I'd lean Bills here.
I kind of like the over at 43.5 as well. Baltimore on the road against Cincinnati. Joe Burrow doesn't think much of the town, but a battle for first place in the AFC North. Cincinnati 8-6, Baltimore 8-6. Bengals are 3-point home favorites in this one. Ravens have lost 3 in a row. That's the negative of this game. The positive is they've beaten Cincinnati 5 of the last 6. The negative is Lamar Jackson, not expected to play. Tyler Huntley getting another start for the Ravens.
Tyler Huntley looked all right.
He did.
Fourth quarter against the Packers last week. I don't know that that's lightning in a bottle or that's who he is. So until he shows me that's who he is, taking the Bengals.
I had the Bengals winning this game by 4. -3 is a little too close for comfort, so I stayed away from this game. But I do feel Cincinnati gets the victory and gets into first place in the AFC North. The Rams on the road against Minnesota. Rams coming off the good victory, 10-4. Vikings desperate at 7-7. I like home dogs. Vikings are 3.5-point underdogs. I like desperate teams. I'm playing Minnesota +3.5, and I'm also sprinkling a little bit on the Minnesota money line against the LA Rams.
I can't say I trust Minnesota with no Dalvin Cook. Alexander Mattison's going to get the reps. Big spots are not usually where Minnesota's best at.
Fair.
They're a team where when you expect them to win, they play terrible. When you expect them to play terrible, they show up and they give you something. When it's on the line, you're not always sure which Kirk Cousins you're going to get. And without Dalvin Cook, I don't know if they put enough scare. They need Kirk Cousins to win the game for them. I don't know how much I want to go on that round. So I can't take the Vikings.
Vikings half game behind San Francisco currently. Actually, the Vikings are tied for seventh place in the NFC with Philadelphia.
And what's the spread on this?
It's 3.5.
The Rams are laying 3.5. Yeah. I'm going to take the Rams.
Yeah, and Minnesota. Remember who won that bet last night, by the way. Tampa Bay on the road against Carolina. Tampa Bay 10-4 on the year. The Panthers at 5-9. Panthers are getting 10 points in this game. I say I like home dogs. I don't know if I like home dogs when they're led by Cam Newton. Sam Darnold's going to playing in this game, by the way. Cam Newton starting. Sam Darnold's expected to see some time for Carolina. I also like the idea of a Brady bounce-back game. Shutout last week. I usually like all-time greats a week after they were embarrassed the week before.
The Panthers are a hot mess.
They are a hot mess.
But the Bucs have issues. You know, Godwin's out with torn knee, so he's done. Mike Evans may not play. He's also hurt. Leonard Fournette is out.
IR, yeah.
For the year. Now you got Ronald Jones in, but you're asking Ronald Jones, Rob Gronkowski, who's 587 years old. Who's the receiver? Who are the wide receivers?
Well, it depends on if Evans plays or not. You have Scotty Miller, who's whatever. Antonio Brown's going to be back, so Antonio Brown will play. That's a big weapon considering everybody else that you have missing. But other than that, Perriman, I guess. That's who Brady's going to throw through?
I'll still take the Bucs and the 10 points.
Yeah, Carolina is such a bad spot. You know the underrated loss, by the way, for Tampa Bay, though? Lavonte David. I love that dude, especially on the defensive side of the ball. That might be the bigger loss compared to Leonard Fournette. I don't know if I'll say it's a bigger loss than Godwin because I really like Godwin as a player. But that loss for David is significant. Carolina, by the way, the reports are that Matt Rhule expected to be back as the head coach for Carolina. I'm surprised to see that because Carolina got off to the hot start this season. They were 3-0, and I know injuries were a huge problem. Sam Darnold was their quarterback, one. Christian McCaffrey's been banged up most of the season. I look at that. You just mentioned how big of a mess that they are. I look at that that franchise right now. I wouldn't bring back Matt Rhule.
Oh, they're definitely bringing back Matt Rhule. They're committed to him forever.
I wouldn't, though.
He was got a seven-year contract.
Yeah, but Dave Tepper has plenty of money. He doesn't care about the money. If Dave Tepper wanted him fired, he'd fire him.
He already fired Joe Brady. That was his scapegoat.
Which, I mean, I would have rather had Brady than Rhule.
So, yeah, Matt Rhule's definitely coming back. And yeah, you look at the team, okay, they started out 3-0. Well, what happened? They lost Christian McCaffrey, and without the running game, Sam Darnold turned into a pumpkin. So, you know, and that's... What more did you expect from Sam Darnold? You might as well look at Sam Darnold as a rookie quarterback because every year Sam Darnold has had a new offensive coordinator. All 3 years in New York, now he goes to Carolina, has a whole other offensive scheme he's got to learn. You're looking at him like a rookie quarterback. You took away his run game. Their offensive line isn't that great. I don't know why Sam Darnold can't hook up with Robbie Anderson, but for some reason there's a disconnect there. That offense does not work without Christian McCaffrey. No McCaffrey, no points.
No, it's true. That's why Brady probably shouldn't have been fired.
No, should not have been fired.
It's why Carolina was in the mix for Deshaun Watson throughout the entire season. He'll probably be a factor for him if the legal situation plays out.
If Deshaun allows.
That's
the biggest issue, if Deshaun allows.
I feel like Deshaun's going to be more open to more team because he just sat out a year. And maybe that's just a stupid thought, but I just have that feeling.
Look, it's not unreasonable to think, hey, I just want to get back on the field. Let me get where I'm going to get to. But, you know, the Panthers made it all. I mean, so from my Florida Pro Football Talk, the Panthers made a legit offer, and Deshaun said no. So the Texans never had to accept or decline because Deshaun just said, no, Miami or bust. And they couldn't get it done with Miami.
Yeah, if Deshaun has that same viewpoint again, it's offseason, I think the Texans might play a little hardball with him. Jacksonville heading to the Big Apple. They face the Jets, a battle of the number one pick of the NFL draft in Trevor Lawrence. A battle of the number two pick of the NFL draft in Zach Wilson. 2-12, 3-11 teams. Texans should have their eyes closely on this one in terms of draft order implications. I'm actually a little excited to see the number one and the number two pick go toe-to-toe.
All right, so 2 weeks in a row we get the Jaguars in a vomit bowl against another team that's also awful. And 2 weeks in a row, we'll see the Jaguars lose to the other team in the vomit bowl.
What do you think of those two quarterbacks? Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, almost done with their rookie season. Do you feel one way or another about their future going forward?
I think Lawrence has absolutely been hindered by Urban Meyer. And, look, everybody thought Trevor Lawrence was going to be, you know, can't-miss prospect. And they sent him to NFL hell. And Urban Meyer absolutely failed him and every other person on that team. That probably set Lawrence's development back 2 years. Zach Wilson, I think, needed more development. And the Jets have all kinds of problems as far as they don't have a lot of great skill position players. And the guys they do have been in and out on IR all year long. They're finally getting Michael Carter back. But the offensive line is awful. And their defense might be the worst in the league.
I still like both quarterbacks. They didn't have great rookie seasons. They still need to develop. I still have seen from both of them the high-level potential that they both possess. I still think both of them have really good futures, even though their numbers haven't been great for a rookie season. Denver at Las Vegas, playoff eliminator game real quick. Denver 7-7, Raiders 7-7 as well. Raiders have won 3 in a row over Denver. Loser of this game, out. Their season is over.
So who's quarterbacking for Denver? Because it's not going to be Teddy Bridgewater.
Drew Lock. Drew Lock, baby.
Oh, boy.
Raiders are a mess, too, though.
They are, and look, you talk about a team where off the field, if you could envision the worst possible off-field scenarios for a team where you have one of your star players gets arrested for vehicular homicide. Your coach.
He's still on my fantasy football team in your fantasy football league, by the way, because that's how much attention I play. Somebody made me aware of that earlier
and
today.
And then you have, you know, everything that went on with John Gruden, how the NFL will not release any emails related to the investigation into the Washington football team, except the ones that were about John Gruden. Go figure how that works. John Gruden's going to have a big lawsuit. And I can't trust the – as much as I don't really like Drew Lock, I don't see how anybody can trust the Raiders at this point. They've been very unreliable since they lost Gruden and then Ruggs, kind of like one after the other. So what's the line for Denver?
It's a pick 'em.
Oh, I'll take the Broncos.
Yeah, it's a pick 'em in that game.
They'll run it.
Extenuating circumstances, you could say, for the Raiders this season. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, Carlos Correa to Chicago. Is that a fit? What are the best fits for Carlos Correa? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful. But the fire is so delightful.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Nick's Place, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Patrick Creighton filling in for Joel Blank. Andrew Carlson filling in for Brendan Riley today. Carlson's doing 7 hours of radio production today on Christmas Eve. Couldn't find somebody, T. Scott? Couldn't find somebody to help him out? Appreciate you, Andrew, doing all the hard work. What's your favorite Christmas song, PC? Because that one's mine, and I didn't even tell Andrew to play it.
My favorite Christmas song has more to do with who sings it than what it is.
Okay.
It's Mariah Carey.
Okay.
I love Mariah Carey.
I feel like I thought it was going to be like a Ronnie James Dio cover of a song.
No, I love Mariah Carey.
Ronnie James.
Mariah Carey can sing anything she wants. Just
I feel like that's
be
not
Mariah
the,
Carey.
See, that's not. I don't feel like that's a like an accurate answer to the question. Like, that's not your favorite song. That's your favorite artist. And the reason it's your favorite artist isn't even because of the song they're performing.
Oh, no, it's got nothing to do with the song she's performing. It's
I know,
got everything to do with Mariah Carey.
I feel like that's a bad answer. It's a bad answer. What about favorite? What about you think? Right? That's a bad answer.
That's a little bit of a bad answer.
That's a
we could go with King Diamond, No Presents for Christmas.
that could work.
You brought some presents for Christmas.
I did. I brought lots of presents for Christmas. We got one more to go.
We got the Earl Campbell Houston Oiler autographed helmet, which the wings are coming up soon, right? The Atomic Wings.
Yes, they are making the Atomic Wings. They're probably going to be done very shortly.
Where are we going to do this? Are we going to
stack some tables together over here?
Yeah. It's going to be messy.
And we're going to have a dozen hot wings and two beers.
I wonder if there's a – are they all drums or flats?
They're
or what?
Whatever they are. They're wings.
That could be tricky.
Hot take, the flats are easier to eat and they're better to eat.
Flats are easier, and they are better.
Yeah, maybe it's not a hot take. What's your favorite Christmas song, Tyler?
Ooh. I don't know. Probably a metal cover of any
A metal cover. That's not Christmas.
Yeah. It is. Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Yeah, I do like Trans-Siberian
Orchestra.
Stuff? I did, yeah.
It's crazy.
I got my wife vinyl of Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Wow.
Yeah. Die Hard. Where do you stand on this side of the debate? Like, I feel like this is the standard Christmas debate. Yeah, it's the age old. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? I don't feel like it is. I feel like Die Hard is the DH that you're forced to play at first base. Like, it's not really a Christmas movie, but you make the case for it. Just kind of like if Yordan Alvarez had to play first. Like, if David Ortiz had to play first.
Die Hard's not a
Christmas movie. Because I think Die Hard's not a Christmas movie.
You're a bad person. You've no Christmas spirit.
I do too.
Horrible Grinch.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN.
Wouldn't touch you with a 39.5-foot pole.
Listen, I told BK and Cody and Jake this a couple weeks ago, that is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Is
that's not telling them, that's asking them.
No. I'm explaining this.
Oh, okay, my bad.
That debate, is Die Hard a Christmas movie, is the same as is a hot dog a sandwich debate.
Wow, okay, I could see that, Calm, because it's not. A hot dog is not a sandwich.
I mean, but at the end of the day, who cares is the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say that about any debate we've ever had.
Well, true, but those two most especially, I mean, do
so
you
do
really
you,
need
so
to
do you think a hot dog is a
those?
Sandwich?
I just don't care.
It's a taco.
Care. I just don't care.
But have a stance. Stand
it's
on
not
it.
A taco
needs
because
to be serious.
It's bread.
It's not a taco, yeah. It's more of a torta than a taco. Asking us when we want the wings for the Giants. Yeah, relatively soon.
Looks like
Die Hard's not a Christmas movie, man.
You know what? Movie. Just because it happens at Christmas.
It's just the setting. That doesn't make it a Christmas movie.
But at the same time.
Is this a Christmas show? No, it's not a Christmas show.
Yes, it is. This is a Christmas show. It is happening on.
Yeah.
It is happening on Christmas Eve. This is a Christmas show. He's playing. Andrew is playing Christmas music. It's a Christmas show. You're having a Christmas beer. Red and green. Look at that. Christmas beer.
Whatever. Carlos Correa, potential fits. Where do you want Correa to go, Tyler? Like if we assume the fact that he's not going to be a Houston Astro, are people yelling sign him? Sign him with what money? If you assume the fact that he's not going to be a Houston Astro, where would you like him to go?
I'm going to guess that he probably will be. See, I don't know.
I'm talking about from a selfish viewpoint, though. Like if you're looking at it from an Astros fan's perspective,
let him go to a National League team. I don't care.
That's where I stand on the situation.
Yeah,
too.
Cubs.
Like go somewhere where you're not going to haunt the Houston Astros forever.
Cubs is probably good because they traded away all their good players,
and they're completely useless by September.
Yeah,
they're the lovable
losers.
They're
just gonna fold.
Yeah,
before the postseason.
And
so
Correa can go there and earn his money and, you know, go shop on Miracle Michigan Mile, whatever it's called, and you know, makes Daniela very happy. But ESPN put together this list of potential fits for the Houston or for Carlos Correa in free agency. The five-star fits, which five-star, that's the best star. They have the Angels listed on here, which is kind of surprising because they already committed big money to, you know, Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. They're going to have to pay him at some point, although right now, currently, that's the best contract in all of baseball. Anthony Rendon got the bag last offseason. They brought in some pitching. Noah Syndergaard there making over $20 million. That doesn't seem like a logical fit for Carlos Correa, but you could see where they make a splash and they go into the luxury tax territory. The Detroit Tigers. This is one that Brendan, who our producer, who is from Detroit, is a Tigers fan. Mm-hmm. I say you can't close the book on Correa to the Tigers, even though they signed Javier Baez to the contract that they signed him to.
What about the rumors that he actually turned down their offer?
Yeah, what was it,
275
for 10 years?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they already showed that they're interested, although you could say, well, when did they make Carlos Correa that offer? Was it pre-Javier Baez? Because if it's pre-Javier Baez, then that, you know, caveat of they're not going to spend big money on two free agent position players this season. You could still use that as an example. If it was post-Baez, though, still very much in play.
The 275 could have been a jumping-off point just to get their conversation started, I guess.
One of the other five-star options they have listed here, which is the one that, to me, like I don't know if I'd call it my favorite, but I definitely put them in the top tier. The Philadelphia Phillies. Didi Gregorius is somebody that can move around. He can play third base. You could get rid of him because he wasn't that productive this past season.
Yeah.
They've been a team that has made a splash in free agency in the past. Bryce Harper, who actually paid off because he won an MVP this past season. They could be looking for a shortstop. I think that's a likely one. And then the obvious answer that you'll always get is the New York Yankees because they desperately need a shortstop. Because you had the failure of Gleyber Torres there this year, which you can slide him over to second base, but not a good defensive shortstop. Where do you think Carlos Correa ultimately ends up? What do you think is the best fit, PC?
I think the Dodgers wind up being a good fit because they've got unlimited funds. They had a lot of money come off their books, and they have other guys on that team who can play multiple positions. Trey Turner can play second, short, center field. You know, Gavin Lux kind of move around too. I think they've got positional flexibility there. and they've got tons of cash. I really like the Blue Jays option because the Jays have shown they're willing to spend. And if you could get Bo Bichette, who's a below-average defensive shortstop, and move him to a different position where, you know, maybe a little better at second base.
And Simeon's gone.
Would Correa Bichette be the most productive middle infield? Because you do have Seager and Simeon in Arlington, but would Correa and Bichette become, and let's not forget, when you go to Toronto, Toronto is a top six offensive park.
Yeah.
That might be the best middle infield in baseball.
8807 saying, why would the Dodgers not sign Seager then to the $325 million 10-year deal that he signed with the Rangers? Which is a good point. If you're not going to get Correa for cheaper than that deal, why wouldn't they have given that to Corey Seager?
Because Seager's a brutal defensive player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brutal defensive player.
Also, another texter saying, the Mets. Correa at third with Lindor would be fun. We've actually seen that in the World Baseball Classic, and Correa looks unbelievable defensively at third base. They've mentioned that they would like to play together in the past, and it doesn't look like the Mets are unwilling to spend money, right? Like, they're already over the luxury tax threshold, and I don't feel like they even care if they go way over, even more than they already are.
No, Steve Cohen, ZFG when it comes to being over the tax, and you'd have to get Correa to accept moving to third base. I don't know that he's going to do that, where I'm going to play third base going forward, especially when he is the better defender. So, you know, if Correa goes to the Mets, well, who's the face of the Mets, Correa or Lindor? Because the better player is Correa. So is that something that, I mean, look, the two guys are willing to play together, that's fine. But you need to get the commitment from Correa. He's willing to go to third base and stay there. And you still have to pay him at the premium shortstop rate.
I believe he would go to the Mets and play third base if they're the only team that offers him $350 million. Like, if you have the Mets at 350 and you have the Dodgers at 310, I think he would go 350, play third, then 310, play short in L.A.
And then I will own a white Mets Correa jersey, a blue Mets Correa jersey, a black Mets Correa jersey, and any other Mets Correa jerseys they can come up with.
Yeah, very good. Merry Christmas to all our listeners. 3364 texting us Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to everybody here as well. We'll step away one final time when we come back live from Nick's Place. I want to pick Cody's brain. I heard he cheated a little bit earlier today. I'm going to try to convince him to come discuss that with us next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's our gift to you.
Wow, just what I've always wanted.
Sports. ESPN 97.5.
It's the most wonderful time.
Live from Nick's Place for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Right, Patrick Creighton filling in for Joel Blank.
There was an earthquake.
Nick's Place, the Christmas listener party. We're currently
Two beers.
The wing contest is currently going on. 12 atomic wings, two beers. Winner of this gets an Earl Campbell autographed Houston Oiler helmet. PC has the wireless mic. He's our sideline reporter,
man.
Out at the table.
I feel like this guy's a ringer.
Patrick thinks he's a ringer. Darren earlier already has won a Warren Moon Purple People Eating Minnesota Viking jersey. He's looking to win two awards on the same day. What better way to come out to a Christmas listener party and win two things?
Like, these guys are just chilling. They're like, all right, I got three wings.
12 beers, or 12 wings.
12 beers would be more impressive.
Five total.
We got a winner!
Beers.
He's already done. I mean, he finished that in, what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes? That was probably
a three or four minute
competition. Somebody's handing him a napkin now. He's unfolding the napkin.
Oh, congratulations,
he's
Darren.
He's wiping his face
you
with his
are the
right
winner
hand.
Again, clean yourself up, and I'll get you a nice Earl Campbell helmet.
So Darren has won two competitions.
One for
he won
the
wing
one for
eating
Dan
contest.
Daly, one for Johnny Bassalone, one for
and he won the two
he,
beers,
he
one
did,
for.
One for country, one for family, I think.
Club.
I don't know. I couldn't hear what
he said.
And now
he's going to go wash his hands.
Yeah, that's probably a smart idea.
An impressive performance out at Nick's Place. Darren, the MVP.
For my mom.
He's thanking his mom for his performance today.
Mama.
I'm sure mom would be very proud of the four beers you downed and the 12 spicy hot wings. Excellent job. Excellent job. That was fun. And, yeah. And a young lady saying that Darren's mom would be very proud and that she raised him right. So that's good. Good job, PC. It went a lot quicker than I thought it was going to go.
You had Darren and Scott McGrath's son were really going at it head-to-head. Everybody else was eating like they were just there for free wings. So
there's currently a young lady, thank you for stopping by today, yelling to us as we're doing live radio, the F word. I'm kidding.
Darren,
I hope my mic wasn't over there.
Oh, we had plenty of those earlier today.
No, autographed Earl Campbell helmet.
But we had a
that
couple.
Is your certificate
it's
of
fine.
Authenticity.
Andrew
May
dumped
you enjoy it.
Hopefully.
Merry Christmas.
Wait, okay, so we have another Christmas wish from here. Yeah, we had that Christmas wish earlier, right? We were giving away, or we weren't giving away. We were requesting wish list items for Houston sports. Cal McNair is selling the team. I'm sure it was a very popular one on the tweet that you mentioned.
It was very popular. Yeah. In fact, somebody had said it shouldn't even be just Cal McNair selling the team. It should be something that involves him. It would be something that involved Cal suffering a lot of pain in order to force him to sell the team.
What did I just walk into?
I feel like that's a little bit too much. It was one of Patrick's Twitter followers.
Gotcha.
Yeah, asking Christmas wish list, and he wanted the McNair family, Janice McNair, current owner, yeah.
Some of my followers are extremists.
I made the comment. Well,
Cody
some would argue you're an extremist, Patrick.
So, Cody, I heard that you were in a competition earlier today. At
I was.
Fine jewelry.
I was.
During the bench flip cup competition with Big C.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you cheated in this competition.
No. I didn't do it in the playoffs because it was too loud. Yeah, that's the standard Houston cheating excuse.
I didn't
do it in the playoffs. It was too loud.
Oh, so you're admitting that during the regular season.
During the regular season, I may have.
So what happened?
Done a little extra.
What happened? What's the cheating scandal that went down earlier today?
Typically, flip cup is red solo cups.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with a red solo cup.
Yeah, the plastic, I think, is vital.
Sure.
It's important.
But when you have the ESPN 97.5 mini red cups that are a little bit thicker, different kind of plastic.
Different material.
They bounce different. So I couldn't get that first one. And so then, I gave it a little help on one of them. Like, I flipped it and then gave it a little help.
Which is not allowed.
And then kept going and then caught up and won.
You did come from behind.
I did come from behind.
I watched the. I didn't see the entire video. I don't know if I just missed it. Tyler Scott was there and an eyewitness to the events that happened earlier today during said scandal.
There is.
And it looks like you have something to say.
Evidence there, of this happening.
He just said videographic, which is kind of like photographic, but not quite at the same at all.
I've had about nine beers today, so
Big C was the opponent to Cody Stutz during the cheating allegations. Big C, would you like to weigh in?
A
on
word,
what happened,
Clarence?
And we're on the radio live, so keep it FCC friendly.
Cheater.
Yeah.
Just one word. A word.
Hey, that's all that needs to be said, right?
You know who worries about who cheated? The person who lost.
Yeah, that's true.
The person who lost.
That usually is the case.
He's calling you a Yankees fan, Clarence. He's calling you a Yankees fan.
Technically, I won. I mean, you were four beers back. You would still be flipping that first cup.
Oh, wow. He's actually probably not wrong. I'd still be over at Klein's. Klein would be walking out like, what are you doing? I'm like, I got to get the first cup. Sorry.
So how did you participate in the flip cup and have as much to drink as you had this morning and then still have like the presence of mind to prep for your show that begins in 7 minutes?
We have a show in 7 minutes? No. I have plenty of time, and we're going to do a bunch of fun Christmas stuff. You guys gave out like some really awesome prizes.
Patrick did.
Some quality. We're about quantity on the Wheelhouse. So we're going to give out a lot of prizes. Now, they may not be as cool, but we're going to give out a lot of prizes. We'll do like some Wheelhouse trivia. We'll do some Christmas trivia. We might even do a little karaoke to see who can get it.
You know, management told me to stop singing on the air, so you got to watch out.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Are you going to have some gift certificates that say a donation was made in my name to the Human Fund?
No. Well, be careful. You don't want to spoil any of the surprises. Okay? And then, let's see, 3:30 and 5:30, the world premiere of Andrew Carlson's rendition of All I Want for Christmas Is You.
He sings?
Who's
H-O-U.
It's you.
Oh, it's you. So he's singing.
Yes, he'll be singing it. Yes, that is a Wheelhouse of Fortune punishment for Andrew from November.
So, do we think Cody? Do we think that Andrew can sing?
No,
he's bad.
Probably.
I mean, I'm awful. Like, I can't have no room to talk.
Oh, you're being a little hard on yourself.
No, I'm not. No, I'm being very accurate.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm being very, very accurate. Big C wants a rematch. He wants red solo cups brought here to Knicks, 27-13 Rocky Ridge.
Yeah.
4 o'clock, top of the hour, Big C, Cody Stewart's rematch. It's all look, it's on the marquee. It's on the billing. It's the match that everybody wants to see.
Hey, this is – Patrick, you've watched a ton of wrestling. The heel never gives you the rematch right away. You got to wait and wait and wait. You got to wait for the next pay-per-view or maybe the pay-per-view after that.
Yeah. Or if the heel does give you the rematch right away, the heel stable always interferes
for
like the next 10 matches
before you
finally get a one-on-one in a steel cage.
Exactly. You don't want BK over here knocking cups off the table helping me.
Yeah, you don't give it away for free TV.
Exactly.
What else?
Clarence needs his own, like, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage. He needs another partner to be the mega powers to take down.
Yeah, we'll have to wait for the next big 97.5 event for Clarence to get his rematch.
Yeah, can't give it away for free, that's for sure. What else you have coming up on the Wheelhouse besides the Christmas festivities?
Man, we just got lots of Christmas stuff. The Texans, I guess, are going to have to play a football game. I feel like the NFL is sort of forcing them to do something that they wouldn't force other teams to do, but... What's new? And lots of fun stuff. BK's, full of surprises, so I have no idea what he's got planned.
Yeah, you come on out, check out the Wheelhouse. They'll be here till 7, 27-13 Rocky Ridge, our listener Christmas party here at Nick's Place. Texans home for the Chargers on Sunday. Texans 3-11, 10.5 home dog against the Chargers at 8-6. You hear what Brandon Staley had to say about the Texans, by the way? We have full respect for the Texans. You know what they just did last weekend? They beat a terrible team. They have a lot of quality players. Going to be a tough game on Sunday. Plus 10.5. You think the Texans can cover with 23 dudes out? They might get a few back, though.
I don't think they were going to cover if they had everybody back.
The spread's at 10.5.
I think they're getting housed. They are getting housed.
Yeah, I'm on the Chargers side of this myself. Didn't like the total at 46. Andrew Carlson, the real MVP. He's going to be singing twice on the Wheelhouse. He's also doing 7 hours of radio production. He did all the hard work. Thank you so much to AC. Patrick Creighton filling in the last couple of days. Really enjoyed it. I'm Jeremy Brown. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Thanks to everybody who came out today as well to Nick's Place. And if you're in the neighborhood, you're in the area, come say hello to BK Cody Stutes. They'll take you until 7. The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5. And ESPN 92.5.
You can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as a dream by the fire.
ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.